This week on the BOAG World Web Show, we're joined by Ryan Taylor from No Divide to talk about what services your web design business should offer. Season 12 of the BOAG World Show is sponsored by Lynda.com and Template Monster. I, for one, welcome our new sponsor, Overlords. BOAGworld.com, the podcast for those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name is Paul. Joining me as always is Marcus and Ryan Taylor.
Hello.
Now Ryan, what, 1904 the last time you were doing the show?
Oh Christ, I don't know. I remember I used to do it all by myself.
Like, well, you didn't. You used to do it with Paul Stanton.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
He didn't do anything.
Yeah, we
that's
just,
harsh.
Me, what I meant was without you.
Ah, yeah, you did.
Yeah. Nobody could understand what we were saying, but we had fun.
We might possibly have referenced that in the last show when we said that you were coming on, that the vast majority of people are not going to be able to understand a lot of what is said today.
We'll try and translate for you, Ryan.
I'm going to try and speak in as broad a Yorkshire accent as possible.
You're not doing it yet, are you?
No. Whenever you're being recorded, we feel the need to enunciate and pronounce our words properly.
Quite right.
Yes. Good. Queen's English and all that, says the West Country lad. So, Ryan, we were talking, I made you stop. We were having a little catch-up, weren't we, before the show started. I made you stop because you were starting to tell us all about what was going on with you. So just for the listeners' benefit, it's worth saying that Ryan was an alumni of Headscape for a while. He worked at Headscape for a number of years. Then he went off and he did his own thing as a freelancer. Now, relatively recently, you've got... You started working with the internet famous Dan Edwards.
Yours.
And you set up, what is it called? No Divide?
No Divide, yes.
Now, all I know about No Divide is you've just ordered a load of pins and stickers.
Everyone likes merchandise.
Exactly.
Everyone likes swag.
So what are you doing with Dan? Tell me about No Divide.
So... go back a few years, about 4 years, probably before I was working with you guys, I decided to completely give up doing any kind of design and just let people who are really good at design do design, and I focus on development. So throughout being freelance, I've always teamed up with a designer, and I've worked with a few different ones. I worked with Naomi and Dan Rubin, Mike Cuss, people like that, but I met Dan when he won at the .NET Awards, when he won Young Designer of the Year.
Was that the heavy metal year?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. It was one of the posher sit-down meals.
Ah, okay, yeah.
I can't remember the comedian they were on stage. Jack.
Oh, yes.
You know him.
That's the one I went to.
You were there as well.
No, you weren't Jack Whitehall. It was the other one.
It wasn't.
It was the...
he was funny.
It was.
He was good.
Yeah, I like him. You see him on all different... talk shows. But that was the first time I'd even heard of Dan. So funnily enough, I'd voted for him because I'm one of the judges, like yourself, Paul. Mm. I'd voted for him because I liked his work. So I made it a point of kind of just introducing myself to him and just, and it turns out we got along really well. And I had a project come up recently, quite soon after that. So I asked him if he wanted to design on it. And as it turned out, we've worked really well together, and probably for the last 2 years, 2.5 years, we've been pretty much exclusively working together as freelancers. He's done all the design work. We we built Oozle last year, the resource app and things like that. So we've just enjoyed working. You know, we're a good fit, as skills kind of complement each other really well. So towards the end of last year, I remember it was August, I was on holiday, and it was just a really rough year for both of us, personally and professionally. It had just been, we were feeling quite flat and fed up. And I sent him a message. I were in Centre Parks with my family, and I just sent him a message. And I don't know why it even popped into my head, but I said we should team up officially.
Let's form a band.
Yeah, we should team up and start an agency and just pool all the resources. Stop all this kind of invoicing each other and who gets what and all this. Basically, we should get married. That was the text. We should team up and start a company called No Divide. And it popped into my head, No Divide, from that, you know, that saying, united we stand, divided we fall.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, because we were kind of propping each other up at this point. We were just a bit fed up, you know, and we were kind of just spurring each other on. So by November, we'd started the agency. And we'd come up with the ox for the logo, which we thought were quite... you know, quite original. And the reason we've got that is the story is actually on his about page. So there's a whole story about where that line came from, united we stand, divided we fall. There's a whole story of the lion and the oxen. In brief, it's, you know, when the oxen stand together and point the horns outwards, the lion can't get them, but as soon as they separate, it picks them off one at a time. So when you're united, you stand, divided, you fall. So that's where we got No Divide from. And also the playing on the fact that he's in Chichester and I'm near Leeds, so we're roughly 250 miles away from each other. So we're not divided by distance because we've got good processes for working remotely. So
see, now that's really interesting. There's a couple of things I like about that. First of all, we were talking last week about, you know, whether you should be in a partnership or whether you should work by yourself, and you've done both. So, I mean, have you found it easier being in partnership with someone?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because in what regards?
In pretty much every regard.
Okay.
From it's the happy, professionally it's been the happy, because I work for you guys, so I've worked for an agency. I was always desperate to work for myself, and I've worked for myself, but I've suddenly got a work-life balance back.
Right.
I've got, you know, and this works both ways, but I've got someone else watching me back. I've got someone else dealing with an email that I might not have time for, and vice versa. It's joint efforts. There's now two people, well, now four people, because we've got two developers working for us now. But there's now four people who are talking about the agency, who are, you know, kind of marketing and promoting us, and, you know, instead of one. You know, so it just spreads the load. It takes the weight off. We're kind of all in it together, you know. And if we're not, then the company sinks. So you've got that motivation to, you know, just pool all your resources and ideas, and you know, the way it's kind of worked out quite naturally based on our skill sets is I'm the technical director, Dan's the creative director, but he kind of does much more of the marketing and promotional stuff, kind of what you do, Paul. You know, he goes and speaks at conferences and writes more than I do, and does more of the kind of connecting with people on Twitter and things like that. I do more of the business management side, which I know Dan very well, and I saw the way he kind of manages his accounts in free agent, and I said, you are not touching No Divide's account. I will do that. He used free agent basically for generating invoices, and had no idea how much money he had at any given time. So you're like, okay, I'm doing that bit. I'm doing that bit because I know where everything is to the nearest quid.
You know? Yeah.
I'm a bit OCD with that. I think you've got to. There's got to be somebody in the company who is, aren't there?
I'm not saying that's stereotypically northern, but.
Yeah, I'm not the tight one though, because I'm the one who will much more excessively spend. But
interesting. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So, what about the remote aspect? Is that working
already? Absolutely love the remote aspect. I'm very all for it.
Right, you don't want to actually have to sit with Dan. That would be too much, would it?
Well, the funny thing is, we'll I mean, it was from working with Dan that we discovered that Skype has a limit to how long you can have a video call for, and that's 4 hours. And then it'll cut it'll cut you off, and you've got to ring back. And that would just
that's interesting.
We just discovered that because what we'd do is if we're working on a project together, we'll just turn the video on and we'll just be there working, maybe even listening to music, but over music over each, you know, just over the microphone. One of us will play a song and we're just working, and something comes into his head, we'll just chat like we sat next to each other.
So almost a bit. Have you tried out Squiggle?
Yes, we have tried out Squiggle.
But you prefer an open mic?
Yeah. And we don't do it all the time, because one of the advantages of working remotely is the fact that when you need to focus, you can just turn everything off and focus. And when you want to connect with people, the thing we use is Slack. And Slack's Slack's nothing new, it's been around for ages, but unless you've got a few people using it, that's when the real benefit of it coming to focus, because we've got four guys and we've got Lucy who does content production for us. And also we've got some channels in Slack, which, because the way Slack works is you have different channels for different conversations. So we have like a channel for each project. And on that project, on a project channel, sometimes we've got the clients on the channel so that they can interact with us through Slack. If we've got a freelancer working with us, or someone who's doing a specific job, like some illustration work or some additional front end development, they'll be on the channel as well. So it's just a central place where everything gets pulled in. You know, someone commits to a project, it pops up in Slack. Someone deploys something, it pops up in Slack. So you've got this kind of passive way of, you've got a feeling of what's going on in the company from day to day without having to check up on everybody every 2 minutes. You know they're working because you can see how many lines of code they've written, or whether or not they've synced a PSD to Dropbox, or, do you know what I mean? It all just goes through this one system. It's absolutely fantastic.
So the other your other developers, the guys that you've taken on, they're spread all over the place as well, are they?
So Sam is in Newcastle, so 2.5 hours north of me and about 8 hours from Dan. And Matt is in Northampton, so about 3 hours north of Dan and about 3 hours south of me. So,
right.
Yeah, so we're kind of up the spine of England. If you draw a straight line from Newcastle to Chichester, we kind of all sit on that straight line.
Right.
If Lucy's working with us, she's in Nottingham, so that's about an hour and 45 minutes from me. So, yeah, it's kind of, we're all over the place. But the thing is, that doesn't matter to us because a lot of our clients are international. So we've got clients in America who we've never even met face to face. So why do we need to be face to face?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so, we've got no overheads. We've got no commute. If you think about the commute alone, I used to commute into Leeds every day. That saves me 7.5 hours a week.
Exactly.
In commuting, which is time I can spend with family or time I can spend on side projects, you know, however I see fit. But if you work that out over the course of a year and multiply that by four people, you know, that's a lot of hours.
That it certainly is.
We don't have to bother going into an office just so we can all sit next to each other, you know.
So what kind of clients are you working with, as a matter of interest?
Right, we've got a big rebuild for a photography-based social network. I don't know how much I can say, actually. I don't know what's under my NDA.
Okay, put it another way. What type of... is there a type of work that you're doing? Are they... that sounds like an app that you're talking
An app and a website.
Right.
So it's got like a website bolted to the side of it and then a big social app. So it's got a big social app, which we use the Laravel framework. So it's got a big social part of it using Laravel framework, and then it's got like a standard website which pulls some information in from the app, which is just a standard site, and we use the Craft CMS to power the content for that site, and they kind of talk with each other. We've got a big website, not a big website, kind of a medium website for a bank that we're working with, which is looking fantastic. It should be out in the next few weeks. But it's kind of that. Yeah, we've got another app that we're just quoting for at the minute, which is quite a big one. Yeah, it's kind of, tends to be the bigger jobs, you know, the kind of 3 to 6 month jobs.
Oh crikey! So quite valuable projects then.
Yeah, one of the bigger ones that we've launched in the last 6 months is one called MotionRay.com.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are in America. They make really good like After Effects templates, and they have stock music on there, stock video.
Yeah.
There's things that you can cut into your projects. And that's got so many moving parts on it. It's a bit insane. It's one of the projects that led me to thinking we need additional people, because that was just kind of Dan designed it, and then I did all the development, and it nearly killed me. So, so I thought, yeah, we definitely need some extra people.
Wow. So, it's been so long since we've talked. I had no idea. I thought it was still the two of you. For some reason, I had in my head you were doing relatively small projects, but I was totally wrong. It's like I've pushed a piece of work in your direction. I don't know whether they've contacted you yet, but it's probably totally inappropriate from the sounds of what you're doing. But there you go.
Oh, not necessarily. It just happens that the things we're getting are quite. It's funny because it's the work we're getting's changed a little bit since becoming an agency.
Yeah,
because a lot of the work that comes now is people who want almost to use us as their continuous technical team that's working alongside the project. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're not just coming in, building something, and then moving on to the next thing. It's building the MVP and then iterating it with new features and continued support and all that stuff. So it's like much more continuous than when you're a freelancer. Because as a freelancer, is much more you come in for a bit and then you disappear, and you might get called back 6 months later to do another bit, but it's not like something every month. Whereas the things we're getting are kind of, I mean, that poses challenges in itself, because if you've got like a retainer in place with 4 or 5 clients, you know, and you're still taking on more work, you're expanding. You know, you have to expand quite quickly because you need more and more people.
Yeah,
you know, working.
Yeah,
so it's. Yeah.
But you know, it's really a good problem to
yes,
have.
Good
right?
problems. Good problem. I'm not complaining. Yes. I'm not complaining. No. I'm
hey, do you know we're 60 minutes in and haven't started the podcast yet?
That's because I'm so interesting.
I know you are. What can I say? Let's quickly mention a sponsor before we get into the discussion that we were going to cover. I want to quickly mention Template Monster, that it's the Template Monster community that have provided a lot of the questions that we're going to talk about in this show and the rest of the shows on the season. They're supporting the whole season, which is great. If you work on smaller site design projects, Template Monster is a great way of making those smaller little projects profitable, because you can save time in terms of the design work that you're doing, obviously, because you're getting in a template. But also, those templates are really fast to implement and they're highly customizable, so a client can feel like they're getting something more bespoke than maybe they are. You also get free stock photography as part of many of the templates, which can save you a lot of time of A, looking for the photography, and B, you're having to actually buy that. And on top of all of that, they've got an affiliate program, which can, if you're a web designer and you're buying a lot of these templates and you're doing this on a regular basis, can actually make a nice little additional revenue stream. So if you're a student maybe starting out and you've got little small clients, if you specialize in those smaller end clients where margins are very thin, then Template Monster is definitely worth checking out as a way of getting things up and running very fast. They have templates for a range of different kinds of sites, from WordPress through to just straight HTML to you name it, every e-commerce platform you can wish for, etc., etc. Find out more about Template Monster and check out their enormous range of templates, then go to boagworld.com/Template Monster. Please check them out. The sponsors are great. I really appreciate Template Monster supporting us now for this entire season. They've done stuff with us previously. And if you love this show, then take a few moments to check out what our sponsors have on offer. Okay, so what we're supposed to be talking about, Ryan?
I don't know. It's your podcast.
No, I was about to go. I wasn't asking a question.
Oh, right. I thought you were asking a question.
No. So it's all right. It's okay. Sorry. What we're supposed to be talking about, Ryan, is it's my southerner accent.
It is. I can't understand a word you're saying. Marcus, can you talk for a bit?
I'm not sure Marcus is even here today.
Honestly, I've been doing all sorts of work while you've been nattering.
Are you saying you're not interested in Ryan's life?
Absolutely. I could repeat every word he said. Obviously, I won't do that because that wouldn't be very interesting for everyone.
Yeah. So what we're going to talk about today is our offering. Now, this is going to be quite interesting, actually, because we've got three different perspectives. We've got Headscape's perspective that have been, you know, had an offering that has, you know, was established, 13 years ago, and it kind of has evolved over time.
Yep.
You've got No Divide that has been around. How long have you guys been around now?
November last year.
Yeah, so
7 months.
So relatively new. That's set up. You know, and you've had to work out what you're going to offer and what you're not going to offer. And then me, that's, you know, come out of Headscape and are doing something very different in terms of kind of consultancy. And I've had to work out what my offering is as well. I've had to work out what it is actually I do for a living, which has proved problematic, I have to say.
Surely it's changed though quite a lot since you've started out, Paul. Mainly because you personally, and I'm not taking the mic, you do like to change a lot.
I do, but not in that length of time, Marcus. It's only been 4 months, mate. Even I'm not that bad. But no, it has evolved to some degree because people have given me money for things I wasn't expecting they would give me money for, which is great. I'll take it from anywhere.
So many opportunities to be rude.
Jesus,
I know. I set them up, and yeah. Okay, so the first question that's come through that I really like is a kind of, and this is something I come up across a lot, which is how much you should specialize and to what degree, right? So at one end of the spectrum, you've got, you know, people that specialize in a particular sector and in a particular size of project and work with a particular technology, right? So really specialized. At the other end of the spectrum, you've got people that are not only do web design, but do branding and do, you know, print design and marketing and the whole one-stop shop thing. Where do you draw the line there? Where, you know, what are the pros and cons of both approaches? So, for example, Ryan, you know, Dan is a hugely talented designer who could quite easily do branding type stuff. But do you do that kind of thing?
We do branding. I haven't found much that Dan can't do so far, to be honest with you. He's a pretty talented guy.
Just because you can do it, would you do it? Do you advertise on your website, for example, that you would do branding?
Yes, I think we do. I think we do advertise branding. You see, I've got, with regards to, I mean, the specialising and the specialist and generalist discussion's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think there's a direct correlation between the quality of work you can output against how general you are in what you do. Meaning that if you spread yourself too thin, the natural, you know, I mean, there is a point where you can't maintain the same level of quality across the board. And I think, particularly when I started out, things were a lot simpler. You know, when I started out, you were a web designer and you did everything.
Yeah.
And there weren't any of these specialties. You just, because it was simpler, a simpler time. Now, there are so many specialties. If you try and do them all, you're killing yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the problem I had last year, in that I was doing front and back end development, and I was switching between two or three different frameworks on any given build, and different languages and syntaxes and approaches. And it just got to a point where this is just insane. Mm. So there has to be a point where you hand off some of that to somebody else, not necessarily because you can't do it, but because if you don't, then the overall quality of the output is going to be poorer because you're trying to do everything. So I think freelancers are starting to become more specialised, either that or they work on very small things where they can do everything. So I think freelancers are becoming more and more specialised. And agencies cover more things. You know, they're capable, because they have multiple people in who specialise in different areas, they're capable of doing a broader spectrum of projects.
Hmm. I reject the premise of your question.
I knew that was going to happen at some point. Some point in this season. It's not my question, don't forget, so you can't reject my question. Go on.
For example, I think Headscape is both a generalist and a specialist, depending on your angle that you want to look at us. We do business analysis, we do information architecture, we do UX design, we do front-end development, we do back-end development, so loads of things. But we tend to only specialise in a couple of CMSs these days. So if you come to us with we want to do a project on a particular CMS that we don't work with, then we say, no, we're specialists in this particular area. So that's why I reject the premise of the question, because I think it can you can apply, unless you are doing one very, very specific thing, and I think I agree with Ryan on that, where agencies can spread what they offer a bit more, basically because they've got more people.
Mm.
Who have different skills usually, but you know, if we didn't do back end development, then would that make us more specialist? I don't know. I don't have an answer, but I don't think it's. I think basically you need to concentrate on what you're good at. There you go.
I just wonder. I wonder sometimes whether a client, because I'm on the No Divide site, this could equally be the Headscape site,
and well, they look the same.
No, but you've actually both got very similar lists of what you do, you know, mm. and split almost in very similar ways as well. So, you know, on No Divide, it's got design, it's got creative direction, brand identity, web design, iOS application design, interactive prototyping. Then there's a development column with, you know, similar things, a consultancy column and a content column. You know, a client coming and seeing that can kind of respond in one of two ways. They can either respond, oh, wow, great, I don't need to deal with multiple suppliers in order to get everything that I need for this project. Or they can look at it and go, okay, these guys are a jack of all trade, a master of none. And that's what I always struggle with, is identifying how clients potentially view that.
Yeah, I think specialisms are good at attracting people who don't know you. So you can basically be an expert in a particular area,
yeah,
and draw people to you. I think, yeah, that's a good thing about being a specialist in a particular area. Showing lots of different skills on your website, again, I don't know, really. I guess you could go too far, yes. I don't necessarily think that we do. We just list the stuff we do.
I mean, I think I don't think we've even been freelance or, you know, all through No Divide. I've ever had anybody come to me and say, we want to work with you because it says you use WordPress. You know how to do WordPress themes. They always come because of the work that you've done. You know, the work's a demonstration of what you are capable of, and if they like that work, then they're going to approach you. You know, and this would be a little bit controversial, but what always worries me, I always get a little bit edgy when a client comes to us and says, "Oh yeah, we want A, B, and C. We're already dealing with D."
Oh yeah,
yeah,
and you're going, right, okay. So who's doing D? And you see it, and you think, oh, we can do A, B, and C really well, but D's just going to let it down.
The classic one. Sorry to interrupt. We've got a friend who's done some designs for us.
Yes.
Can you build it?
Yeah.
We just basically say no. Yeah. Every time.
Yeah, we do.
So, and often, you know, we have genuine inquiries for, we've fallen out with our supplier, can you take over our website? And again, not something that we're particularly interested in. Though we do provide support to clients that we've built sites for, we tend to be more kind of front-end and design-led and consultancy-led. So even though we do some back-end work, because we concentrate more on front-end stuff, we need to have done that.
Yeah.
I think to have a good relationship with our clients. I guess some people it'd be the other way around.
If we get queries like that, we will try and encourage them to maybe start rethinking about a redesign.
Well, yeah.
And start it again. Unless you're taking over from somebody who's built it very, very well, but you'll know yourselves how often that happens. Because if they're that good, then they're still working with them.
Yeah.
If they're falling,
or they've fallen out because of price or something like that, and that's the last kind of relationship you want to kick off with.
Exactly.
I tell you one thing I like about your offering, or the way you present your offering on your site, Ryan, is below the list of kind of what we do, you've got a bit about our process, which point four of that is launch and refine.
Yeah.
You know, you very much push from the very beginning that, you know, it's not a one-off project that you then walk away from. There is a post-launch phase. That's nice.
Yeah. Well, that's we do try and have ongoing relationships with those clients rather than it's try and right from the very start get them out of this mindset of we're not building a wall. You know, when you get to the top of the wall, it's finished and we walk away. You know, we're building something that evolves and changes, and content gets updated, and things need adding, things need taking away, and that's a continuous thing. So it's just setting that expectation from the start, really.
I think where I get a little bit suspicious when it comes to the kind of generalized approach is where at the kind of either end of the spectrum, where you get a web design agency that says they also do print.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that rings alarm bells in me. That makes me go, okay, so are they a print design house that thinks they can do a bit of web here? Or equally, are they a web design agency that think they can do print? Because they're very different things.
Yeah.
We've done a tiny amount of print over the years. We've never advertised that we do it.
No. That's a different thing to kind of, help a client out if they need it and to advertise you do it. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you know, where you get a development house that, you know, does all these kind of enterprise systems and then claim to, oh, we can do web design too. And that's because they kind of view web design as Mickey Mouse coding.
Yeah.
And so that they can go, oh, yes, we can throw something like that together. So that end worries me. But then you've got to say, you know, in today's world, is it naive of us to turn around and say, oh, we do web design and we can do iOS design too? Or is that something that is now a radically different discipline and, you know, are we pushing our luck saying we can do that?
Well, the interesting thing is on NoDivide, we say we can do iOS design, but currently we can't do iOS development.
Right.
Because Dan has experience in doing iOS design and it's, I don't think it is, there may be some people who disagree with me, and I'm not an iOS designer, but particularly in Dan's skill set, it's not a big step from him being, you know, designing an app or something to then designing an app for mobile device. We don't have any iOS developers on staff currently. We'd like to in future, but at the moment we don't. So we don't say that we can do that. We don't false advertise and say, oh yeah, we can do your app. And then once we get the contract, scurry around trying to find someone to build with. You know, we just do stuff that we know we can do and do well. I think on the other end, I think from the other perspective is from a client's perspective. When a client comes to a web agency, surely they expect that agency to be able to deliver their project in its entirety, rather than a web agency turning around and saying, oh yeah, well, we can design it, we can do all the templates on the front end stuff, but you're going to have to find someone else to put a CMS on back end or build you a bespoke system. And
that
then
a lot.
And then they, well, yeah. But then that client's then got to go off and find somewhere else, and you don't know who they're going to find and what they're going to do. I'm always wary about handing over my hard work to somebody I don't know. But I think that's one of the things that nearly killed me as a freelancer. I'm kind of very precious, isn't the right word, because now that I've got two other developers working with me, I'm quite happy for them to be. I know that they're good devs and we're all working from kind of a similar set of guidelines, so the output's quite consistent. But it always worried me. I think designers worry about handing over their designs to a developer they don't know, and front end developers worried about handing their templates and front-end code to a back-end developer they don't know. So having those three things in house, and content production as well, through the form of Lucy, is it's a nice. You know, I feel like we've got a lot of the bases covered.
Yeah.
And if we need something really specialist, then we can bring somebody in to work with us and join the team for that particular specialty.
So is Lucy employed by you, or is she still a freelancer?
Lucy's still freelance. Okay. But we bring her in for content production. She's works for her own age. She's got her own little agency going, and we bring her in for, you know, as we need her. We don't need her all the time.
No.
So we bring her in as we need her.
But so if a client comes to you and says, you know, we've got an in-house team of developers, we just need some designs from you, would you turn that down?
Not necessarily, but we'd want to know who the developers, you know, meet the developers, speak with the developers. We have, and not all through No Divide, but we have in the past, like, you know, taken on work where it's just the design portion. But then again, we did some design work for a site, which is really nice design work, and the developers are actually really good, but they specialise in, what's it called, Magento? We don't know Magento, so that were fine. They built it and they've done a really, really good job. I think it's like with anything. Do you know what I mean? There's so many people working in the web now. It's just making sure that you're working with, you know, people who work to the standard that you want to work to. And if you can find those people, you know, me and Dan were two freelancers who found each other and found we work well together. So we trust each other to do the work together. You just got to find people that you can trust. And I'm not in the habit of blindly handing work over to people that I don't know. I'd want to know who they were and where it was going. And that would have a big influence on whether or not I took the project on.
It's finding those people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the danger is, you know, the first time a client came to you, and you know, they wanted some design, and you looked at Dan Edwards and thought, okay, I could use him to do the design. Yeah. You were taking a risk. You were taking a risk that maybe he was shit. Maybe he might be a great designer, but he'd be incredibly unorganized. Yeah. So that there was a gamble there, wasn't there?
Yeah. I've kicked him into shape. It's all right now.
Because, I mean, that's, and then, of course, there's the other danger that if you don't offer the complete service to the client, like you didn't do Magento, there is a danger the client goes to a developer who does Magento, but that developer also does other things and ends up stealing the work away from you.
Yeah, exactly. But it's the same thing. I mean, you know, I've built sites for Mike Cuss. Mike Cuss is absolutely fantastic designer, but him coming to me to build the templates, he's taking a risk, because the first time he did that, he didn't know, you know, he'd hope I was good and he'd seen my work, but he's taking a risk. He don't know what I'm gonna, you know, if I'm gonna be able to build his designs and everything. And you've got, the first time you use anybody's a risk, though. I had me garden landscapes. I didn't know who I was hiring. I was taking a risk. He's doing a really nice job. You could have equally done someone who'd used substandard materials and, you know, and only garden was subsiding and everything afterwards. You know, that's always, you know, it's the same buying something from a shop. You know, if I buy something from River Island, all my clothes shrink after the first wash, so I always go to Next.
How do you find these people that you partner with? How did you find Lucy, for example?
How did I find Lucy? I spoke at Second Wednesday, which is an event that she organises.
Okay.
And we got chatting. She's kind of a friend of a friend. And I needed some content work doing for a website I was building. And I just, you know, took a chance, I suppose, and just asked her to do the content. She produced some really nice content. So, and I've seen other work that she's done, because she's now working. We're kind of in the same circle of people, so I see the work that she's producing for other people and the work that she does for us and stuff. So, you know, she's good.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been very lucky at No Divide, because if you look at, like, this is going to sound like bragging a bit, but if you look at, like, our team and what they do, they're all very similar in that they're very proactive and contribute to the community. So you've got Dan. Dan's won an award. He speaks at conferences all over the place, Future of Web Design and all things like that. Then you've got Matt. Matt's wrote a book and he writes a lot. And Sam runs an event up in Newcastle, and he's got stuff on CodePen. These are people that are, you can actually see their work. You can go and find out about them individually and see what they're doing, and you can see that they're good and the quality of the things that they're doing are good. So I think that's a really important thing when you're looking for people. The people that stand out are the people who contribute to the community, and that's been the case for as long as I've worked in the web industry.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. I would much prefer to hire someone that is putting themselves out there and is contributing. And that's a really interesting point, for people that want to develop their own careers as well, of how important it is to get out there and do stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the same was true for you and me as well in how we built our career.
Yeah, I just started helping you with Borg World podcast and then just leached off you for a few years.
Yeah, then you dropped me like a stone.
Dropped you like a stone when people were giving you work,
Yeah. And as for Marcus, he does bugger all.
Sorry?
See? My point perfectly made.
Haven't we moved on to another question yet?
How many questions are there?
Oh, no, we're not going to cover all the questions. Don't worry about it. So I wanted to ask about hosting, right? Because that's an area that the clients kind of want, yet brings with it a lot of kind of pain and misery at the same time. Do you host for your clients? And do you provide some kind of, can they ring you up on Christmas Day if their website goes down?
They're two separate things.
Right.
So, no, we don't host for his clients, but we do set up their hosting for them.
Right.
So we'll register some hosting with a service provider that we recommend. Yep. They pay for it. They can contact that hosting provider if the server goes down. Whether or not they can contact us on Christmas Day would depend on the support contract we have in place with them.
I'd like to read that.
Well, this is something that we're kind of still working out, because it's different for every client as well. It depends what it is. Do you know what I mean? If your client was Twitter, which it never would be, because Twitter have got a massive team. But, if Twitter went down on Christmas Day, how many guys at Twitter do you think are going to get a phone call saying, Twitter's gone down, it's Christmas Day? Somebody's going to be working on it to get it fixed.
Yeah, so it depends. But to support that, they have to have, as you say, a lot of people.
Yeah.
You haven't got a lot of people in No Divide. There aren't a lot of people in Headscape. So providing that kind of 24/7 support is really hard.
Yeah.
And you have to be very clear, I've learned over the years, about what you do offer and what you don't offer. And you've got to be honest and upfront with potential clients about it.
Yeah.
So what do you say, Marcus? What goes into our normal kind of service agreements?
Basically that we will provide support during working hours, and I state what working hours are, and that includes the period between Christmas and the New Year. And I will basically speak to clients and say to them, look, that may raise alarm bells for you. And if you phoned me up, probably not on Christmas Day, but on Boxing Day, let's say, something catastrophic had happened, I can almost certainly say that we would deal with that, but I'm not going to put it in writing that we're going to that we will guarantee that we'll deal with that. So that's the kind of position that we're in. We provide working hour support, but we're very proactive with our clients about dealing with issues as and when they come up. And that seems to be okay now, but in the past we've had overnight support contracts and all that kind of thing. We're just not big enough to deal with that. You need to have a team of people that are just doing that.
Yeah.
And then it's fine, because then you'll have rotors and everyone, some people do nights, others do days, and then you'll swap over and all that kind of thing. Yeah. We don't have enough people to do that, so don't pretend you can, would be my view. We also used to provide hosting and manage hosting. They've all gone now.
Full-time job doing that. But I think there's two other points to make. By not hosting for the client, and actually the client's got a relationship with the hosting provider, if a server goes down, they can contact the hosting provider. They don't have to contact you. And the other thing that complicates support is when your clients are in a different time zone.
Yeah.
So you work 9 to 5, but your clients are in America and they're 5 hours behind you. They've only got you for a very small window. Yes. And that's difficult to manage.
So well, what do you do about that?
Previously, I worked at silly hours fixing things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're still finding this. I think everybody's still finding the feet with that. Like Michael says, it depends on your size. So, I mean, one option is you can have, you know, you can have hours when you'll support. If it's a bug that's within like 6 months of the work being completed, we'll fix it free of charge. If it's something like an SSL certificate's expired, which we had recently, which is not awesome. What happened? An SSL certificate wasn't working because Chrome had changed the security encryption level for the SSL certificate, so they needed an updated SSL certificate. Well, that's not our fault, so that's chargeable. And then if it's kind of like a high priority and it's outside of our support hours, then you can look at, we don't do this yet, but you can look at, you know, like charging double time or something like that if it's classed as, but you know, you leave it to the client to say, if you think this is a high priority and you need this fixing, like in the evening, it's going to be double time to get this fixed. And then, you know, you've got to decide whether or not it's worth having that type of support, you know, and the fact that it's like being on call all the time, though. Do you know what I mean? Something could go wrong at any time. And the more work you do and the more clients you have, the more chance you've got of getting called out, which it's hard, you know.
Yep. It's hard. Yeah, it's something we've kind of fought with is a bit strong, but we've had to kind of consider regularly for years. And as you say, the more clients you've got, obviously we've been around for a very long time, so we've got some clients go back 10 years.
Yeah.
And yeah, you've just got to be upfront and honest. And also, one thing we've done probably in the last 2 or 3 years is basically say to clients that, you know, this is clients we don't work with anymore, but we've still got, we're still supporting a site. Is like, you know, you need to have some kind of arrangement with us. You need to have some kind of support and maintenance agreement with us that states this is what we're going to do. Otherwise, you know, we can't guarantee that we'll be able to respond at all, even to that catastrophic thing that I just described earlier.
Yeah.
So we've been very keen to ensure that everybody's got at least some kind of agreement in place, even if it's just, you know, just for a few hours that they can call on.
Yeah.
But just that it's official then. So I think that's an important thing. Alongside me saying earlier that out of hours work, we kind of do on a best endeavours basis.
Yeah.
Because that's all we can do.
Another thing that Headscape used to do, whether you still do, is the whole people can get a faster response if they pay more. Is that... Well, that's not a very well described version of it. But do you do anything like that?
Not really. I mean, there was a point when we did do that properly. You know, it's kind of like this rate will get you a response within hours. This rate was your standard rate, whatever. But we found that if you do that, you're having to push back ongoing project work to fit it in.
Yeah.
So what we've done, which seems to work pretty well, and we don't stick to it utterly rigidly, but is to have one day a week is what we call fixed day, where basically we'll build up small tasks on it on sites that are kind of up and running, and have a day blasting those every week. So basically, your kind of standard response time within a support agreement that you'll have with Headscape will say that standard fixed stuff, or you know, we want a small feature changing, is we'll do all of those on Wednesday. Usually Wednesdays are considered fixed day, and that seems to work quite well. But as with all these things, being a small agency, you've got to be flexible. Sometimes you might need to do more than that. Sometimes you might have to jump more quickly. Other times you can not have any fixed day tasks and speed up a project. So but that's an idea that's worked quite well and clients seem to be okay with.
I tell you the one other area that I wanted to talk about in terms of offering before we wrap up, because we are beginning to run out of time, it is consultancy, right? Every project involves consultancy work, okay? So, you know, and as I look down at No Divides, you know, What We Do list and Headscapes What We Do list, you know, you all, both of you and myself, all list consultancy as services we provide, whether it be website reviews, user research, you know, customer journey mapping, whatever else, right? But there is a, even if a client doesn't pay for that, some of that stuff is necessary on a project anyway. You have to do, you know, planning and analysis and that kind of stuff. So how much of that is, where's the line of what's chargeable and what's not as an agency? I mean, in my situation, I am a consultant, so it's all chargeable, you know, because that's the only thing I do. But in your kind of situation, it's a little bit more complicated, and I'm interested in where that line gets drawn.
We've talked about this quite a bit, me and Dan, and one of the things we don't do is we don't provide like a shopping list of services that we're providing. So we don't list out saying, right, okay, this much of the money is going on branding, this much of the money is going on design, this much is going on consultancy, this much is going on project management, this much is going on testing.
Right.
Because you instantly give the client this thing going, well, don't bother doing any testing, I don't want consultancy, and I'll project manage it. Can you bring the price down however many grand?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, we need those things to do, to provide what you require. So we don't do it. It's just included in the price.
Right.
We quote to deliver what they require for the project, and they either accept that quote or they don't. And within that, we're consulting, we're managing the project, we're designing, we're branding, we're building, we're delivering their requirements. And there's no lines. There's no like, oh, we can save money if we don't talk to you and give you ideas. It's just they're paying for that service. And that's how we approach it.
So does that...
Interesting.
Yeah, because you, Headscape, don't do that.
Right. I do have to just point out that I've just had a calendar reminder that I need to put my out of office on. Why could that be?
I don't know. Why?
I'm going on holiday.
Well, nobody cares about your holiday, Marcus.
I do.
Where are you going?
Oh, to the Isle of Wight.
Oh, well, that's really dull.
No, it's not. I'm playing.
Oh, yeah, that is exciting. Yeah, you are playing.
I'm playing a couple of gigs in the Isle of Wight. It's like a tour overseas.
Anyway, you've got to finish this podcast. Why doesn't Headscape do that? Why, Marcus? Why?
Many, many clients want you to outline, you know, to give modular pricing. And I think it's actually a useful thing to do. If somebody comes back to me and says, oh, we'll project manage it, I'll say, well, okay, but you'll be doing it with us and we're not reducing that price. I see where you're coming from, Ryan, but there may be a particular aspect of modularized price where the client puts their hand in there and says, well, actually, we don't want that. We really don't want you to do that part of it. So everyone wins. We don't have to do that bit. Their price gets reduced, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's useful as the project's going on, especially if scope is creeping, that you can refer back to, we said we were going to spend a week or whatever on this particular task. The scope has moved beyond a gradual creep to a bigger creep now, and it's looking like we're going to spend twice as much on it as we said in this long list of stuff. So therefore, you know, we're going to have to put the budget's going to have to go out a bit to compensate for that. I'd really struggle to have that conversation if I hadn't have shown them that price for that particular part early on. But that's just me. It works
so,
for us.
So the flip side of that then is then. You've got to, you know, if you put in a line for, I don't know, user research, you know, doing some usability testing.
Yeah.
What do you do when the client turns around and says, nah, don't want that?
I would have a conversation with them along the lines of, you do want that. However, this is why. However, we could probably, it's a tough one, isn't it? Usability testing is a really tough one because I've often used it as an example in the past of an example of where you could reduce budget. We all should do it, but not doing it doesn't mean to say we're going to design a completely unusable turkey. So
Yeah, but that's the thing. You're going to do a level of usability testing even if you cut it off that list. Because you've got to for it to be functional. You know, to a certain quality.
What Paul's referring to is getting external testers to test it. But yeah, of course, we have to test it. Yes, and that would be part that. Then I'm with you, Ryan. That's all part and parcel of development work. So I don't mind. I think you have to deal with it. You also have to deal with the fact that clients have set budgets for projects, and you have to work. You have to work the scope of the project often to fit that budget, and if it means removing some things and not others, then so be it. Sometimes, obviously, you can go too far on that, and then I'll say, look, we just can't do this. Sorry, we can't do what you want within your budget. But I'll certainly always try to kind of try and work something out to fit within a budget.
Mm. Oh, well, that's a good point to end, a point of slight disagreement.
that hardly ever happens, does it?
I know, it's quite frustrating. Really, I need to get people with diametrically opposed views in. It would be a lot more interesting. I want a good fight. That's the trouble with inviting people you know and get along with, you see. I need to pick people that I really hate in the industry and get them in instead.
Who's that then, Paul?
I'm not listening. I tell you who I don't hate is lynda.com. Do you see what I did there?
Yeah.
That was good. See, I've become a lot slicker over the years, Ryan. You can tell, can't you?
Yeah. I'm just going to eat my banana while you do the sponsor reading.
That's harsh. Lynda.com.
I'm nothing against Lynda. Lynda's very good.
It's just sponsorship generally. You don't
care. No. It's just you, Paul.
It's you.
And just me. It's me speaking. Right, that's fine. So, lynda.com have over 3,000 on-demand video courses. I can't do this seriously now. About business, creativity, technical skills, you name it. Great place to learn any new skill, from designing websites, coding apps, even running your own business, which is really cool and very relevant to this series. It's interesting. This morning I've been writing a post on sales techniques, and so I was also preparing this for today, and so I thought I'd do Google, see if they've got anything on sales techniques. Of course they've got stuff on that. They've got loads of stuff on it. There's even a video that tells you how to go about asking for a pay rise, right? So anybody from Headscape or No Divide listening to this show, if you want a pay rise from Marcus or Ryan, then there's a video that teaches you how to do that, which is great. So they've got thousands of video courses on demand. You can learn at your own schedule, which is really great, because the courses are structured in such a way that you can either watch them from start to finish, or you can consume them in little bits as you go. So there's loads of stuff. All of that is free and accessible for a flat rate. You can get a 10-day free trial as well to get you up and running, to try it all out, to check out some of the courses on there. And there are literally thousands on everything you could imagine. You go to lynda.com, which is lynda.com/BoagWorld. You'll be set up in minutes, and it's really easy to use, and there's loads of stuff there, and it's great, and I really like having them as a sponsor. It's always good to have sponsors you actually think are cool. So there you go. That's pretty much it for this week, except for Marcus's obligatory joke. We were going to get the guests to do a joke.
My jokes are too long and filthy.
I'll hand you one over, Ryan. So I was going to do a couple of very short ones. So here you go, Ryan.
So you're pinging him a joke.
Yeah, I'll do this one in a minute. Police arrested two kids yesterday. One was drinking battery acid, and the other was eating fireworks. They charged one and let the other off.
I like that, actually. That's got a good one.
Here's one for you, Ryan.
He has to say his own joke. You should have sent this one
told your joke. A classic Tommy Cooper gag. I said to the gym instructor, "Can you teach me to do the splits?" He said, "How flexible are you?" I said, "I can't make Tuesdays." Was fifth.
Ignore the was fifth on the end of it.
I was thinking that. I thought I'm going to spoil the ending.
But you did, and then you still had to say it.
I just thought it'd be funnier. That bit was funnier than the joke.
It was, actually. That made the joke, just randomly putting was fifth on the end. So there we go. That's it for this week. Thank you, Ryan. It's really nice to have you back on the show. We need to meet up. You don't go to enough conferences anymore, Mark. Ryan.
I'm going to be at Reasons. I'm going to be at Reasons to be Creative in Brighton.
Oh, good.
Are you going to be there?
No.
No, there you go.
I don't go to Brighton.
And I'm going. I'll be in Chichester next week, actually.
Oh, will you?
Which ain't far from Southampton. Where are you, though? You're in Devon.
I'm in Dorset now.
Dorset, yeah.
I don't leave the house, so we need to find a conference we both go to.
Yes.
We need to make it happen, because that's the only time we meet up. But yes, thank you so much for coming on the show. Next week, we're going to be joined by yet another Headscape alumni. This is getting dull.
Rob, you don't know anyone else, do you, Paul?
I do. I have known lots of people. It just has so worked out, has it? And basically, people come to Headscape and then go and set up successful businesses. They look at Headscape, how that works, and don't do it in the opposite way, you see. So next week we've got Rob Borley coming on the show, who we're going to be talking about, this sounds so dull, doesn't it, as a show, we're going to be talking about finances.
And I know so much about that.
Well, you need to talk to Chris and find out how he does things.
More than I say.
It would have been great to have had Ryan on the show for this, because apparently he's tight ass and likes to know where every penny is.
I'm not tight ass. I spend it all. I just know exactly where it all is and where it's all going.
Right. Well, there you go. There's nothing wrong with that. That sounds very sensible to me. Yeah. I like that. So I think that'd be quite interesting, because we'll get into, you know, things like how to manage it. We'll talk about things like free agent. We'll talk about accounting fees and budgeting and all of those really exciting topics next week. So join us again then. But for now, Ryan, thank you for coming, and thank you everyone for listening.
Bye.
Bye.